Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Here in the U.S., we have a little over 1 month until our 2015 1040 federal tax return is due. And since 2015 is long past, there may not be too much we can do right now to reduce our 2015 liability. But we definitely can get educated and take steps soon to reduce the amount of federal and state taxes we will owe this time next year. And my next guest, certified financial planner and author Roel Saramago, is here to suggest how we can pay less tax in 2016. And he's here to share his three D's to lower this year's tax obligation. He's also here to talk about his exciting new book, which comes out at the end of March, called Personal Financial Myths. Now, let me get that title straight. Why don't you give me the title, because I know you've changed it, Roel. It's Undiscovered Riches, sure. Busting 7 Money Myths to Find Your Hidden Wealth. Isn't that the correct title?
You got it.
Okay. He had it on Amazon on a different title, but he's coming out with a printed book and an e-book at the end of March, so that I'm sure you'll be interested in looking into that, and we'll talk about that later. But Roel Saramago is a certified financial planner, investor, speaker, and financial coach. And for nearly two decades, Roel's passion has been to empower individuals like you and me with the right knowledge, tools, and inspiration to achieve our financial dreams. And he has a unique view of accomplishing financial freedom, and it's not winning the Powerball lottery jackpot. And Roel also is a new father of a precious new baby girl. And congratulations on the precious event, Roel, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Thank you, Roy. It's a pleasure and an honor for you to have me here.
Yeah, well, let's begin with the taxes. At this late date, is there anything at all we can do to lower our 2015 tax obligation if we haven't already filed?
Well, yeah, there's a little bit. If you can, if you have a traditional traditional IRA,
yeah,
you may be eligible up to $5,500 to contribute to that and deduct from your 2015 taxes.
Yeah, what's the deadline on that? Can you do that right up until tax filing, or what's the deadline on that?
Right up until tax filing, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
But anyway,
couple of little caveats in there, though. If you have an employee-sponsored 401k that is being contributed to either by yourself or your employer, then that reduces the $5,500.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that would. Yeah, I know how that works. Well, let's turn to 2016 taxes. What are the three D's for lowering our tax bill this year?
Yeah, the three D's are deduct, defer, and divide.
Oh, I see.
So you look for whatever deductions you have, like contributing to a traditional IRA or participating in your employer-sponsored 401k. So you can deduct those contributions from your taxable income or your tax base, and then you lower your tax bill. Yeah. Deferring is similar. It's like a 401k. When you contribute to your 401k, you're not actually avoiding taxes or eliminating them. You're just postponing them until some future date when you're presumably in a lower tax bracket.
Yeah, and a lot of those, what is it, 70 and a half, you have to start taking money out of the IRAs and declaring them for taxes then, but you certainly probably would be in a lower tax bracket by then.
That's the assumption, yes. Yeah. So you will have to pay taxes in the future because the government would want you to pay them at some point.
Good old government doesn't forget. What about divide? That's an interesting one that I wasn't so aware of.
Well, dividing is splitting income, and not as many people have this a choice available to them, but what dividing is basically splitting income. So imagine a two-person household where, let's say, the husband is traditionally is earning $100,000 a year, and the wife is a homemaker earning zero.
Yeah.
Well, the husband, as a family unit, they're paying a lot of taxes on $100,000.
Yeah.
But what if each of them were able to claim $50,000 on their taxes individually? So two people paying $50,000 in income or paying tax on $50,000 yeah. each worth of income, it would be a smaller tax bill.
So they would have to file separate returns, and obviously the joint return wouldn't work if you were dividing your income. But so it may be advantageous then to file separate returns for the husband and wife, and to split the income up then.
That's right. The addition of two people, again, paying taxes based on $50,000 each would be a smaller tax bill than one person paying $100,000.
I see. Does the government do a lot of investigating to make sure that, you know, in fact, say the husband really earned $100,000 and it was 50-50? I mean, do they look into that if it's a separate return of how much each spouse earned, or is there some flexibility there?
They may. It's based on the honor system. And if you're randomly chosen for an audit, then you will have to. The burden of proof is on the taxpayer.
Yeah, that's always the case. You're guilty until you're proven innocent. But no, that certainly would be a potential real savings if indeed you can split the income between the spouses and they both have lower tax rates individually than you'd pay jointly if they combine the income. Well, in your book, you contend that winning the lottery jackpot or inheriting a large lump sum of money does not ensure sustained financial independence. And what's wrong with winning the next big Powerball jackpot and then selecting the lump sum payment? Won't that set me up for life? Or what's the problem with that?
It could, but you'd be surprised. Well, there's proof of it all over pop culture and the media of people who received large lump sums and then in just a few short years end up bankrupt.
Yeah, that's true. I guess if you'd won that $1.3 billion, you probably wouldn't go bankrupt, that recent Powerball jackpot. Then, of course, tax man gets some, and it's usually multiple winners, so you don't get all of it.
That's right. But, you know, people can make a decision to do ridiculous things, like maybe buy an island for a few hundred million dollars and can spend it that quickly. It's all relative.
If receiving a lump sum windfall does not ensure financial freedom, how do you actually define the term, or what do you see as true financial freedom that all of us are seeking?
Well, true financial freedom really is just when your income, your ongoing income, let's say your monthly income, exceeds your monthly expenses.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
On an ongoing basis.
Yeah.
So by comparison, the traditional model is that we would need to save up, and hoard a stash of money.
Yeah.
And then at some point, we're going to reverse that flow and start depleting that hoard.
Yeah,
but that hoard is finite. But what if you're able to take that stash of money, convert it into something, let's just call it an asset, or a machine that prints money for you, that spits out money for you on a monthly basis?
Yeah, that's very good way to put it. Then you don't have to worry about running out like so many people do.
You can manage the expenses.
Any suggestions for those of us in our late 40s or early 50s, say, how do we establish sustainable cash flows with only a modest investment of time while we continue in our primary occupation? Can that be done? I mean, that's really the issue, is how we establish these funds flows that, as you point out in your book, are so essential for real financial freedom.
Yeah, it can be done, definitely. And it depends on how far the individual wants to take it. It is going to take some effort and a little bit and some stepping out of the comfort zone to wrap the wrap one's mind around the concepts. But it could be as simple as selling stuff on the internet, right? Costs very little money to set up. It does require some knowledge, so some time spent on learning how to do it, but you definitely don't need to quit your day job to do so.
We recently had a guest here that talked about these little treasures, I think she called it, where you can set up these income-generating websites on the Internet that don't take a lot of your time, and they can be very productive. So that's certainly one way to do it, I guess.
Mm-hmm. There's many. Actually, I have a free report that I'm working on that's called 50 Part-Time Business Ideas That Can Replace Your Full-Time Income.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
So I'll make sure to email that link to you once that's ready. But it's a free report, and it's things like you could convert your, you could rent a room in your house if that's your, you know, if that's your flavor, for some monthly rental income, anywhere from $500 to $1,500 a month. You could rent out the basement in your house if that works.
Yeah, that's possible.
Right? That doesn't that doesn't take any extra time away. But little part-time ideas like that, you can start doing those things on the side.
You talk about busting seven personal financial finance myths, and I guess you talked about one that's saving, you know, just building up that hoard. But could you give us two or three of the other myths and why they're so misleading? I know they're very unconventional, I think, to most of what you read in the financial primers. So give us a couple of those other myths you talk about in your book.
Sure. The first one in of the seven money myths is the time is money myth. And where that came from is it's mostly accredited to Benjamin Franklin, who said time is money. But in the very next paragraph, the letter was actually a letter from an old tradesman to a young one in terms of advice. But in the very next paragraph, Ben Franklin said, credit is also money. So it's often misleading where people interpret it as you have to work to earn money, meaning trading your time for money. But that is very flawed, because what if one day you can't work? Like the traditional form of retirement is, I don't want to work. I don't want to trade my time for money. So the perfect answer to that is, again, setting up an asset that produces money for you, like a rental property, like a, like a website.
Yeah, that's true. What about the budgeting myth? I know everyone tells us to budget our personal finances and, you know, act like a business and all that kind of thing. What's wrong with the budgeting myth?
The budgeting myth, what's wrong with it is how people treat budgeting. It feels like a good exercise, and it's just theoretical when it's on paper. But in application, that's where the whole thing falls apart.
Yeah, I've had that experience so many times. This budget's beautiful, and then it comes down to actually executing it.
So the big, the missing factor, the big reveal of that chapter, secret of that chapter is motivation, is having a bigger goal as to a reason why you want to, a reason why you don't want to spend $5 on a coffee when you can easily afford it. Like, who can not afford $5 coffee? But you opt to go for a cheaper, just as good tasting coffee that's like a dollar or less than a dollar. Like, you look at it and say, yes, I can afford that, but I don't want to because I have a bigger goal in mind. You got to have a bigger goal to make your budget work.
That's so important. If you don't really have a intended long-term outcome and really go beyond that to visualize what your life will be like with that outcome and how positive it will be, it's easy to just say, oh, heck, I'll go ahead and get the $5 coffee.
Really, it's very short-term gratification.
So what about the home equity method? We don't have time to talk about it anymore, but I just wonder what that could be.
Well, the home equity myth is the general consensus that people say, oh, I want to pay off my mortgage as quickly as possible. But it wasn't that long ago. You know, there's The Big Short, the movie that came out about the big crash in the housing market. People thought that they were safe with having equity in their homes, but that can turn on a dime very quickly, as we've already seen. So when people slave away at their jobs and scrimp and save every extra penny just to pay down their mortgage faster, when they could have it disappear, in as we've seen, in less than 12 months, that is very detrimental. So
Not to mention losing the tax benefit, which is one of my favorite deductions every year, the interest.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. In the U.S., your mortgage interest is deductible. That's right. We don't have that in Canada, where I'm from.
Yeah.
But the home equity myth is that equity that's sitting in your home is not doing anything for you.
No,
so
isn't.
Once again, with the same concept, you could take that hoard of equity and get it to work. Think of it as like employees of yours. You know, you get it to work and get it to start generating more income for you on a monthly basis. Again, in a rental property or a part-time business or a website.
Yeah. Well, you discuss all seven of these myths in detail, plus you add a bonus myth and include a chapter on putting it all together in your new book that's coming out in March called Undiscovered Riches, Busting Seven Money Myths to Find Your Hidden Wealth. I'm having trouble reading it because I know that's a new title that you're coming out with. And is there one, where can we go to purchase that book? I guess that'll be available, you said, the end of March?
It'll be available the end of March. I will have it available both on Amazon as well as my website, CoachRoel.com.
Oh.
That's CoachROEL.com. And yeah, they'll have updates there.
Okay, and once again, you might know if you go on Amazon right away, and before that new book is out, there's a book called The Wealth Deception, which I guess is a prior version of the book coming out in March.
It is.
Does it have more? But, you know, if you're really impatient, you could go on Amazon today and look at that, but it's probably worth waiting a few weeks for the new one to come out. Is there one piece of advice you would like readers to take away from your book? What would that one piece of advice be?
I would say consider entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
Even on a part-time basis, because just being a straight employee, we've got decades and decades of proof that that just doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, that, I can vouch for that. So, and your website is CoachRoel.com. That's where they should go to find out more about you and your services.
That's right.
And, well, in conclusion then, as we contained in the Amazon.com excerpt from Raul Saramago's prior book, The Wealth Deception, while the world's economy may be on the precipice of a massive correction, your personal economy doesn't have to follow the same fate. And there will be victims and there will be victors. And the deciding factor will be whether or not you understand those critically important truths about your personal finances, those seven myths, before it's too late. Now, I'm not certain I agree 100% with every point that Raul makes, but his book certainly is an eye-opener. And one thing is certain, there's clear evidence that people are running out of money in retirement. It's not only commonplace, but that money, that number seems to be increasing, but it's also clear that the number of millionaires around the world is increasing. So perhaps the problem, as Raul puts it, is not the lack of opportunity out there for personal financial freedom. Maybe the real problem is lack of knowledge on how to generate and keep our fair share of the money. And no, Bernie Sanders' government can't make it happen for everyone, even though that sounds great in your political ads. And I recommend instead you preview Raul Saramago's book with that new title, Undiscovered Riches, and to learn those seven financial myths that may be holding you back. And thank you, Raul, for joining us, and best of success in getting your message out there.
Thank you, Roy. It's a pleasure. Thank you.
To continue our discussion on personal wealth and true financial independence, let's talk about winning the lottery. Now, I'm certain you recall the Powerball lottery jackpot a couple of months ago when the prize was over $1 billion. Okay, so the lump sum payment wasn't that large, and it was split three ways, but it's still a lot of money. Maybe not to Donald Trump, but it is to you and me. But right now, I want to congratulate you for not winning the lottery prize. Furthermore, for the rest of today's program, I'm going to explain why it's best that neither you nor I won the jackpot. You may disagree. It's a free country, after all. But I contend that any self-confident, inner-directed man or woman of middle age can accomplish a winner's mentality without first winning a dime. And here's my reasoning. First, no one can gain lifelong satisfaction with the sole objective of accumulating wealth. Who wants to sit around and count money all the time? The only true and lasting prize from winning life's financial lottery is the freedom to choose. Presuming we remain healthy and of sound mind, financial independence grants us the license to pursue precisely those primary daily activities which we cherish the most. A key issue confronting the independently wealthy is how well we choose. You know, in the late 90s, the co-founder of an internet search engine company, remember those crazy days when companies were reaching huge valuations without earning a dime? Well, anyway, this guy sold out and became so wealthy that he decided to retire at the age of 29. And he was then quoted as saying that he planned to dedicate the remainder of his life to playing golf. Can he sustain his enthusiasm for golf over the next 40 or 50 years? Will his intended 12,000 rounds prove optimal for his wife and children and for the community around him? I guess it will help his country club, all those dues. But do they create inherent value for others? At age 75, will this multimillionaire look back with pride upon five long-ago productive years in his 20s, followed by 46 years of goofing off? You know, you and I are wise enough to recognize that lifelong contentment is not handed out from above like a year-end bonus or a stock option. True and lasting satisfaction is experienced only by those who routinely search for new horizons, develop latent talents, and contribute meaningful time and energy to the welfare of others. Golf and sailing are fabulous hobbies, but mature self-starters like us demand far more. Our world is full of men and women who look, feel, and behave like lottery winners, even though they have never won or inherited a dime. You know, those kind of people that draw other people to them are always positive in outlook and always on the sunny side of the street. Well, like it or not, 95% of us, unfortunately, or fortunately, as the case may be, we cannot afford to ignore the continuing need to earn a living and to generate money to pay our bills. For us, the secret is to pursue a primary vocation which will compensate us for having a good time, performing activities which we generally admire and enjoy. And as a trade-off, some of us may need to scale back some lifestyle aspirations. Do we really need that new car every year, or do we really need to have a larger house than our neighbors? The finest of possessions, you know, will never compensate for the daily stress or absolute monotony of an unfulfilling or stressful occupation, something we don't enjoy doing. It's useful to keep in mind that your ultimate long-term goal is not wealth accumulation per se. Who cares whether your balance sheet, say someone like Donald Trump, is $4 billion or $10 billion, or yours is $1 million or $2 million, or $500,000 for that matter, but it's the sustainable peace of mind which results from genuine financial security. You know, having a flow of income, as our guest today talked about, that's sufficient to fund a lifestyle. Personal wealth simply provides the freedom to choose what you want to do with the rest of your life. And once you identify the financial cushion you will need to accomplish realistic individual and family lifestyle objectives, you can begin building that cushion. Please don't establish personal financial aspirations based upon what someone else has. Instead, set your very own financial and emotional balance by resolving three personal issues along with your spouse and your children, obviously. This should not be just a solo exercise. Question one is, how do I want to joyfully spend the remainder of my life, or our lives if you're a married couple? And two, how much will someone pay me to perform the vocation or primary daily activity of my dreams? And note that someone might include employer, present or someone else, clients, customers, retirement benefits, maybe partly the USA government for Social Security or the stock market. And three, how much annual cash flow and wealth accumulation will our family require to sustain our chosen lifestyle, to pay for the kids' college and retirement, and to guard against future emergencies? You know, it's both ethical and realistic to demand and plan for a challenging yet enjoyable adventure through the remainder of your life. Why shouldn't you enjoy waking up every weekday morning? Why can't you end up the week on a high note, energized but not stressed out or worn down to the bone? Take time out now to envision an ideal career path, which may or may not be your present vocation or your present employer. What do you expect to earn from this ideal vocation over the next 20 years? And as a next step, plan out present and future family expenditures and wealth accumulation targets, and don't forget to factor in a bit of inflation, because that can certainly change things. Approximate and write down estimated annual cash flows required to achieve those targets. Now it's time to pose the $5 million question. Are cash flows anticipated from my targeted vocation, my spouse's ideal vocation, and passive family income streams, if any, sufficient to pay for life's necessities, establish a rainy day fund, and purchase that lifestyle that both of us earnestly desire? And as a final step, you may need to stretch and bend vocational and lifestyle objectives. In selecting an actual target vocation, you must consider only those career paths where you can earn enough to pay the bills. Obviously, we must be realistic on that. And the alternative is to scale back targeted expenditures, maybe cut back a little on those planned dream vacations or that summer cottage you plan in the woods or on the lakefront. You might have to scale those back a little and then make sure that they you are not spending more than you will earn in the precise vocation of your dreams. And the final step to establishing a lottery winner's mentality is to scope out an interim financial plan for your journey from now to the future. Obviously, you have to have an interim plan in place before you can get there. And planning interim finances is perhaps the most challenging aspect of midlife transition. Sound gap planning requires an ironclad resolve and the unbiased objectivity of your bank's commercial loan officer. You know, you must be, may I take a little time to suggest a six-stage transition planning process that you might want to use. First, lay out in detail every aspect of your targeted transition process. And it's usually more difficult than you think, so be sure to factor in contingencies. This might be modification of your present job if you just want to get more satisfaction but stay with your present employer, but you need to generate with your employer a more satisfying career path. Maybe at least search for a new employer, new business startup, return to school, early retirement, whatever your transition process involves. Then second, anticipate the number of months you will need to complete that transition, and it usually takes longer than what you anticipate. That's a good ground rule to start with. And then third, estimate extraordinary transition costs, including job search, advanced training or education, franchise or entry fee, cost of purchasing an existing business or of starting up a new one. And then four, inventory, cash, and liquid assets on hand, plus anticipated future funds flows that will be available to finance your transition, and potential future sources include spousal income, savings accounts you can liquidate, interest and dividend flows, severance pay, or maybe pension income if you can take early retirement. And then five, determine the gap between anticipated cash inflows and the sum of family living expenses plus extraordinary transition costs that you identified in step three. And finally, step six, search for solutions to fund the transition gap. This could include a home equity loan, maybe sale of your present residence and downsizing, at least temporarily downsizing until you earn the income necessary to support your targeted lifestyle or even liquidation of certain assets. Then to complete your preparations for launch, merge your career and lifestyle targets with a realistic transition funding proposal and construct your very own coordinated 1 to 3 year plan of action with numbers in place. And once in place, you will be among those fortunate few who have truly internalized a lottery winner's mentality. You will know what you want out of life, where you're going, and you'll have a targeted plan to get there. You know, you may judge me crazy, but I really wouldn't want to trade places with those three couples, I guess they were, who won the recent Powerball jackpot. And my three common sense maxims are as old as human history, but they're fresh as the morning sun, and here they are. And please don't be too cynical. But a reward most cherished is one fully earned, not one granted, won, or inherited, and I really do believe that. Second, as we look back, our fondest memories most often are of the anticipation, planning, and striving for a target rather than the actual goal accomplishment or having that target in hand once it's achieved. And third, life absent clearly defined goals and inspiration for tomorrow is no life at all. And before returning to your normal daily routine, I suggest you take a few moments right now to infuse upon your consciousness two guiding principles. And principle number one, yes, I did win the lottery emotionally. I've taken control of my life and have appointed myself CEO of me. I have absolutely no doubt that over time I will accomplish every single life objective that's truly important to me and my loved ones. And second, I will make all the difficult financial and emotional sacrifices up front. And these short-term sacrifices will buy me a lifelong lottery winner's mentality. And once committed, I will pursue my dreams as though I had won the lottery. Next to good health and loving relationships, there are two treasures above all others in life. One is a life in financial balance, and second is an enjoyment of every aspect of daily living, including, quote, work. Unquote. The only vacation right for you is one that rewards you for having a good time. And the greatest roadblock to pursuit of your dreams is a debilitating fear over how to pay next month's bills. But astute planning and sacrifice in advance will help you establish and sustain the positive energy and self-reliance necessary to convert plans into reality. And over the next several days, weeks, and months, dedicate whatever time and energy is needed to build self-confidence and to visualize every aspect of a new era of fulfilled you precisely on your own terms. And once that positive vision of a future is firmly entrenched in your mind, you will have accomplished a genuine lottery winner's mentality. You will be fully prepared to venture outside previous comfort zones to create your own breaks. Now go for it. And please remember, I discuss a full range of career, lifestyle, and relationship challenges and choices to make and lay out a comprehensive step-by-step path to middle age renewal in my book, A Midlife Challenge Wake Up by Roy C. Richards. And to contact me, preview my book, and to retain also, I'd love to speak with you as a motivational speaker, personal coach, or consultant. You can visit our website to reach me. That's www.middleagerenewaltraining.com. And my books also are available in print and in email version on Amazon and barnesandnoble.com. And that's our program for today. Tune in next week when my guest will talk about renewal for you ladies and for we men, how we can help bring joy and accomplishment into your lives. See you then. Thank you once again for tuning in to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.